It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Hello, friends. A tradition unlike any other this week, and it's the Masters. But before we dive into that, we have a lot of other sports to discuss, including the amazing Final Four games on Saturday night. The national champions are the Jayhawks. The last spot in the Masters is punched at the Texas Open. Baseball is back this week, and the NFL sees some more changes. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Well, you stole my intro. I was practicing all day saying hello, friends, and you ruined that. So moving on. Busy 4 days for me. I was at a wedding Thursday, Friday.
Congratulations. I didn't even know you were engaged. Oh, not yours. Sorry.
Not mine. Sorry. Not mine. That's why I'm smiling. Two close friends of mine tied the knot on Friday. So Thursday was a little friends and family get together. And then Friday was a ceremony. Everything, you know, really nice. It was great. A lot of fun. Good to see some familiar faces and spend time with them. But the highlight, Stark, for me, Thursday night. So we kind of met in their suite, couple drinks, appetizers, went down to the lobby bar, more drinks, appetizers. And then once the lobby bar closed, everybody was invited back up to the suite. Open the door, table full of Chick-fil-A sandwiches and sauces.
Ooh. Wow.
It was like, I think I pushed someone out of the way to get in. I felt like a kid on December 25th when they run down the stairs to see what Santa brought them. Chick-fil-A claws delivered.
What a great idea. That's a great way. Like, it's an end of bar night special.
Yes. Yes. So I glued myself to the table, put the old chain and ball and chain to the table. I wasn't leaving there. So that, you know, unbelievable. But congrats to them. And thank you for the Chick-fil-A.
The only thing that would be better is if you walked in there and there was just a table full of chicken nuggies, just all the way up to the top. Just one, you know, every time you walk by, you could just grab one at a time, maybe a little dipping sauce around it. Oh, that would hit the spot.
Technically, you could do that with a sandwich. It's a bit more, you know, ambitious. But I guess here for Canada, we're only slowly starting to get Chick-fil-A's here.
Good point.
You know, our American friends are probably like, "Meh, that's nothing."
I don't even think I've had Chick-fil-A.
Oh, well, drive downtown or drive to Kitchener or wait. I think Square One's getting one in Mississauga shortly. So it is worth it. So that was great. And then Saturday, Sunday, two nights of WrestleMania. Right. So it was, yeah, I mean, we had the Final Four games and everything, but, you know, two nights and a lot of fun. So
I saw Stone Cold chugging beers and smashing Vince McMahon around.
Yeah, it was great. He came down. You know, he hasn't wrestled in 19 years. Was the last time he was in the ring, but he looked good, and he was, you know, basically drinking the entire match he had. A little thrown together one, but it was good. But the highlight for me, I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, there was a guy. I don't know if you remember the name Dusty Rhodes.
Yes, I do.
Legend. So his son, one of his sons, he kind of spearheaded AEW. He was like one of the founding guys in this new promotion that's been around for 3 years.
Hold on. Is his son Gold Dust?
That's the older one.
Okay.
Yeah, but yes, you're right. So his younger son, Cody, was in WWE, left, started up AEW, and then left a couple months ago, and everybody knew he was coming to WWE. It was like the worst kept secret. He debuted WrestleMania Saturday night. Music hit. Same presentation. It wasn't like some different gimmick. It was what he was, and the crowd went nuts. I went nuts. It was great.
Look at you. Just living your glory. WrestleMania guy and Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A and Cody Rhodes. What a weekend.
What's your go-to get your ass out of the chair onto the dance floor at the wedding? What's your song? Chicken dance?
No. I don't know. I mean,
YMCA?
It really depends. how many cream sodas I've taken in over the course of the evening. Rasputin by Boney M is always a crowd pleaser. That was not played despite requests, but a good time.
Good to hear that you're back out on the dance floor. That's awesome. I haven't been to a wedding in forever. But yeah, man, great week. Sports are kicking. I always say best time of year. And one thing that's not even going to make our T5, but I got to talk about it. The Maple Leafs are red hot, man, and I'm loving it. We're pumping in, getting ready for the playoffs. Full Leafs Nation, it's time to go. They are 5-0 in their last five, including a win over Boston, Tampa Bay, and Florida, all three teams in their division that they're in the hunt with. So it's like, hey, you know, last week you asked me, who do I want to play? I said, Boston. Forget that. Bring on the Lightning. I don't care. We smoked them last night. Bring on Florida. That doesn't matter. Matthews gets his 50th at home. I mean, I watch it on TV, but it looked electric in the building. Wish I was there. Definitely going to have to go down to a game now if he gets close to 60. And then he scores his next game to make it 51. And then a hat trick on Monday night against Tampa Bay gets him to 54. Ties Vive for the record, single season record by the Maple Leafs. He's obviously going to pass it. He's still got, you know, 14 or 13 games left. So 60 is definitely in his wheelhouse right now.
You think he hits 65?
65 is tough. But I mean, let's think. He had some health issues. He missed games with suspension. Another year, could he get to 70? Possibly. It seems like the league's going that way. These guys are going to have, you know, they're going to have more than a handful of guys make 50 this year. So the goals are up. But Matthews is clearly the best player in the league. And my kids ask me every morning watching the highlights, is Austin Matthews better than Connor McDavid? No, he's not. McDavid's still the best player in the world. But right now, Matthews is the best player in the NHL.
I think I saw something, and I saw it in passing. It may be wrong, but he has something like 71 goals in his past 82 games or something. That's insane.
47 in his last 47.
Wow.
Now, just stop and think about Gretzky scoring 50 and 39. I mean, that blows that out of the water. Yeah. That's how good he is. And then my son says, is he going to score the most goals ever in one season? And we looked it up, and Gretzky was like 92 one year. So I'm like, no, I don't think anyone's getting to that, pal.
Just a couple short.
But you know what? Sunday night, the basketball is over for the Final Four anyway. We know who's going to be in the championship game. The Valero Texas Open ends. Wasn't that much. The Grammys were on. My wife was kind of watching it, and I was tagging along. But really, that's when the Masters starts for me, is that Sunday night, the week before, 7 days before they crown the champion. My dad and I get on the phone together because my dad's been running for the last 20 plus years, the best Masters pool of all time. He's got 12 groups of five players. You select one player from each group. He used to be the old school piece of paper, print off 200 copies, and he would hand them out around the press box at the Blue Jays games, get all the degenerate sports writers and executives. They'd be dropping their sheets off with cash to them in his little suite that he sits in, just like he was the godfather on his daughter's wedding day, just stacked with master sheets and $20 bills. But now we've upgraded a bit. We've got the digital kind of aspect to it, and it's same vibe, though, the same format for the tournament for the last 25 years that he's been running, and it's a great week leading up to the Masters. So I thought I'd run you through my Masters week and what it's like for me, who doesn't even attend Augusta. Monday, I like to watch the driving range sessions, get my first glimpse at the course, see how it's going to look for the rest of the week, make sure the weather's going to be right for the week, and hear the experts as they talk nonstop about who's going to be hot this week. And of course, this week, all the talk was about, is Tiger going to play?
All right.
Tuesday, I start to decide who I'm going to bet on, who I'm going to take in the pool. Sounds like you've been doing the same thing, Mike. Start circling some names, put a couple question marks beside some players that you think might be looking good. Groups are announced for tee times, and you have your plan for Thursday and Friday. Plan your work schedule accordingly, depending on who's teeing off and when they're teeing off. Wednesday, you got the par three contest. It's fun to watch and follow along, except for the year that Tony Finau almost broke his ankle after getting a hole in one. Ouch, still tough to see. But once the sun goes down on Wednesday, it becomes serious business for the players. And for me, Wednesday night, I started a new tradition last year. I go back I watched the full final round of the 2019 Masters, which I recorded and saved that year. Tiger wins it with an epic leaderboard. I have a few beers too, and that sets me up for my Thursday to get going. Thursday morning, got to wake up early, enjoy the ceremonial tee off. The first groups are off and going. And then as I work for the full day, I always have a TV on in the house. Keep all the TVs on the Masters. TSN's got a great now. They got a bunch of different channels. You can watch different things. Every TV in the house, it's got something on. I work from home, so I can wander around the house for breaks and take a peek and look at what's going on. Then at my desk, I keep the iPad with the Masters app open. I like the old school leaderboard that I can follow along. You know the big white one, Mike?
Yep. I follow the same.
Red numbers. I can see it. They change it. It's just like I'm there. Just like I'm down in Amen Corner. It's great. Friday, that's the afternoon where the big names start to playing. Back in high school, I would skip the last period, come home, watch from 1 till 6. I'll eventually do the same thing with my boys. Always let your kids skip school on the Friday of the Masters. Get them home, get them watching to see who's going to be in those final groups for Saturday. Saturday, family tip here, get out there early. Wake up, spend some time. Hey, make your wife breakfast, get her a coffee, take the kids for a bike ride on a nice spring day maybe. And then as soon as you get back, you plan it out. You know when everyone's teeing off. You couch it the rest of the day till that last putt is in. Switch over to the Leafs game on Saturday night. Then you examine the leaderboard and you figure out which one of those guys on the leaderboard is going to have a life-changing moment the next day. Always cool to think about on Saturday. Now, Sunday comes around. I'm not a religious man, but it's as close to going to church as possible for me. I spend the morning by myself watching every golfer go through Amen Corner. My dad usually pops over. We watch the last few groups tee off. They play out the final round. And then my favorite part, when the champion is given the green jacket in Butler Cabin, doesn't get anything better like than that. The nerves that that guy must have when he feels and he's slipping that jacket on there with Jim Nance, his beautiful voice, last year's champion, putting it on you. Everyone wants that coat and you finally get it. My first thought, if I actually won the Masters, would be, wow, I get to come to this place every April till the day I die. What a cool feeling that must be.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm sure we'll dig into it a little deeper later in the show, but it is a tradition unlike any other. It's a very fitting description. And any golf fan, such as yourself and me and many others, lives for this week. It's truly the best.
I agree. Can't say it any better. You can obviously tell I'm super jacked for this week and to get talking about it. But first, you got to stick around. We got our T5. We got a lot of other great sports we got to talk about before we get into some Masters chat. So stick around. A rivalry is between two teams with history and hatred that dates back years and years. Two teams that are both successful and that the thought of losing to the other team rips your heart out. Luckily, we got to see that in the Final Four, and that will be our T1. North Carolina raised up to play one of the best games of the tournament and edge out Duke 81-77 to end Coach K's career and move on to the national championship game against Kansas, who earlier beat Villanova by 16. Mike, was this back and forth what we expected from these two teams?
I think so. I think, you know, we kind of talked about last week that it could very well be the best game of the last three. And I think you can argue it was. I mean, back and forth all game, 18 lead changes, 12 ties. Obviously, the rivalry, Coach K's last game, you add all that, the pageantry in it. But the fact that these two are heated rivals that have never played in the NCAA tournament and then go out. Both teams played very well. You know, as it got into the thick of things, I think Duke missed, what, four foul shots in the last 350? And that really started to, you know, put the favor into the Tar Heels. And, I mean, both teams took their leads, and eventually Caleb Love slammed the door shut.
Yeah, it was a slow start to the game.
Yeah.
And I always wonder, you know, is it nerves about these kids getting to the Final Four? It's the thing you always talk about. But the thing that I always consider, too, is this is their first time moving from, you know, obviously their gyms that they always play in, and then they play in some stadiums or arenas, let's call it. But this was is a full-blown stadium. It's a different feel when you get to the Final Four. Remember, the court is raised. Your eyesight for the basket's a little bit different. There's obviously way more fans all around. So it just must feel different. I feel that the start of these games, all three of them, had slow starts, and I wonder if that could have been the issue. But eventually they started to generate some offense. Duke had a three-point lead at the half, but UNC came out flying, going 13-0 run, which gave them the lead in the second half. 18 different lead changes you mentioned throughout the game. But Caleb Love, man, what a game. He led the Tar Heels on the offensive side, defensive side, 28 points. He converted that crucial three with less than a minute remaining, along with that game-sealing free throws. I mean, UNC had six national championships, really only three if you count the March Madness style, since 1985. They're a powerhouse team. They're a team that, or school, I should say, that everyone knows about and associates with basketball. And we talk about that, basketball school, football school. UNC, basketball school. If you're a top kid coming out of high school, they've got to be on your short list of five schools you want to go to. And this just made them that much better than Duke.
Yeah, Armando Bacot, 11 points, 21 rebounds for him in the game. He was a big factor for UNC as well. And, you know, like you said, Duke had their chances late, but those missed free throws kind of hurt them. And then Caleb Love hits that three. And, you know, from there it was kind of it. But, I mean, you know what? Coach K, he's done now. And, you know, I don't know if anyone truly expected this team to win the championship, but I think they need to be pleased making a Final Four run with a fairly young team down the stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, Coach K had a great career. He won't be remembered for losing to UNC twice in two of the biggest games of the year. He's got some good wins under his belt, but I mean, it's a bad way to end things. Let's be honest. This isn't how he wanted to end his career, losing to his biggest rivalry in a Final Four game on a Saturday night, big stage. But his team just, you know, they looked to be playing on their heels most of the night, almost like afraid to lose. Like they felt the magnitude of this game. And I mean, let's remember, these guys are kids. They're 19 to maybe 22, 23. They couldn't get out to a big lead and really establish themselves. Being up at halftime is great, but three isn't much. Like, it's one possession. So it would have been nice for them to have a little bit of wiggle room going into half, and they probably sweated it out at halftime. Listen, Duke's going to come back. They're always going to be good, but there's going to be some changes. New coach is going to be, things are going to be done maybe just a little bit different, and they're going to recruit different players. But I wouldn't be worried like this is the end of Duke. I mean, come on. They're an established blue blood school.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, looking at the early projected rankings for next season, they appear to be a top 10 team probably by some poll. So they'll be fine.
Yeah. And then the other Final Four game, big time blowout. Kansas smoked Villanova. It was never really a great game. It was a great start. Kansas was up by 11 at the half. I mean, Villanova, without Justin Moore, they couldn't score from beyond the arc. And Kansas, they just kept hitting their shots. Every single time I looked over, Kansas was just draining threes and going up. They were up 19 at one point. I mean, you come out of Saturday night, Kansas was clearly the favorite for the national title game, even though UNC beat Duke.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just a, you know, much faster performance, good defense, good offense for Kansas. They truly deserved it. You know, Nova had a run there at the end of the first half to cut the lead, but they were still down by 11, and it just, you know, they just couldn't get into the thick of it, and Kansas deservingly booked their spot in the final.
It's not just comeback season for Tom Brady, but for Kansas as well. And the national championship game did not disappoint, so it will be RT too. The Kansas Jayhawks were down 15 points at the half and looked all but dead until three-pointers started to fall and injuries took down the Tar Heels. Holding on to the last shot, Kansas are now the national champions for the fourth time. Mike, a number one seed ended up winning, but it wasn't easy.
No, I mean, you know, the age-old saying in sports, a tale of two halves. You know, you could say that about a lot of sports, basketball, obviously, football and others, soccer. UNC comes out firing, playing well, dominated the glass in the first half, you know, really were impressive. And you kind of felt, okay, maybe, you know, maybe they're riding the momentum here over beating their rivals, and they just came out firing, looked real good. And as you said, you know, the injuries, and they just seemed to run into a wall in the second half, and it was a totally different game in the second half. Kansas came out firing. I think at one point in the second half, it was a 31-10 run they were on to, you know, put themselves back into position, and they ended up outscoring them 47-29 in the second half and outscored them on turnovers 14-2. So those are two very significant things that turned the tide for the Jayhawks and ultimately, you know, put the game in their favor.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I was a little worried about UNC coming into this game. Obviously, maybe their game of their season beating Duke in the Final Four. Could there be a letdown off the start? That's what I was thinking. But they were so impressive in the first half. The big guys dominated, and Bacot had a double-double in the first half. He tied the single-season record with 31 double-doubles, tying him with David Robinson. That's a hell of a feat. That kid is going to be a star in the NBA, I believe. Puffy Johnson turned out to be a big force for them. After only 2 points in the first half, he played his heart out in the second half till he literally threw up on the floor. Hadn't seen that one before, but sometimes when I run around that much, I think I'm going to puke. So I understand where you're coming from, Puffy. But Love turned his ankle twice. Bacot looked like he twisted his ankle, the same one that he twisted in the Final Four with 2 minutes left. I mean, and then three bad threes at the end of the game for UNC when they could have gone just for a nice two layup to keep the game going and maybe a quick foul. It just buried them. UNC, you know, they gave it their all right to the finish line, but Kansas was clearly the better team. And whatever happened at halftime, Kansas snapped out of their funk and were able to come out strong. I mean, it was the big guys for UNC in the first half. Second half, it was all Kansas big guys. They owned the glass. They looked as though they got every single rebound, both sides of the court. McCormick had 15 points, 10 rebounds. Jalen Wilson also had 15 points, and he seemed to be hitting skyhook after skyhook down the stretch. Kansas deserved to be champions here.
Yeah, I mean, just think of those last few seconds of the game. It's 70-69 for Kansas. Bacot has the ankle roll, whatever it was, loses his footing,
yeah,
buckles, loses possession. Kansas has the ball. They go out of bounds. Possession goes back to UNC.
Crazy.
I mean, you know, they end up missing the three attempt. But look, I mean, the thing, Kansas deservingly won. I think, you know, we said over the course of the tournament, they looked fairly solid throughout the tournament. But I mean, gotta give UNC their flowers, right? This team was a bubble team in February. A lot of people didn't think they were going to be in the tournament, and they go all the way to the final, and you know, I'm sure they will be a top program again next season.
Yeah, and that's what's great about this tournament now that it's over and we look back and kind of recap some of the highlights that went on for the last week. Shout out to my mother-in-law who's like, this tournament's still going on, when I told her the championship game was last night. I'm like, yeah, it's three weekends. Stick with it. It doesn't change. It's the same every year. But we had two of the best games in the last three. So the tournament just kept getting better as it went on. The Final Four teams were all blue blood, big college basketball schools. You love to see that. You had the Cinderella St. Peter's run as a 15 all the way to the Elite Eight. Coach K, one of the greatest coaches of all time, his final time in the tournament. What's going to happen for Duke next? We'll find out as they move on. Kentucky upset as a number two in the first round. Do they bounce back next year, similar to what Virginia did when they were the number one seed and got bounced in the first round, followed it up with a tournament win the next year? And then we had full crowds back to normal for the first time in this tournament since 2019. It's what I love about March Madness. Three great weekends with tons of games, tons of storylines, and some of these players get to live out dreams. It's so cool to see.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was, you know, I think the first 4 days is always the most enjoyable, but the games down the stretch through, you know, the Sweet 16, Elite Eight and on, didn't disappoint.
Imagine winning millions of dollars and securing your professional future for the next 3 years, and that not even being the best thing that happened to you that day. Well, that happened at the Texas Open, and that will be our T3. JJ Spahn won the Valero Texas Open with a dominant back nine for his first win, which will now send him to Augusta for his first Masters. Spahn shot a final round 69 despite a double bogey on the first hole of the day. While many PGA players tried to chase down that Masters chance, Spahn turned on the gas down the stretch. Mike is winning the Texas Open and flying directly to Augusta, one of the coolest things on the PGA.
Yeah, for Spahn, I mean, 31 years old, first win in 147 starts, and as you mentioned off the top there, double bogeys the first hole, and typically when that happens, you're probably not going to be in the winner's circle. But
it kills my round. If I double bogey the first hole, sometimes I'm like, I might as well go to the car and go home and spend time with the kids.
Yeah, usually I'll take it because I'm like, okay, not a bad start, but we'll make up for it, I'm sure. But I mean, birdies on 6, 8, 9, he has a lob shot for a birdie, and that kind of puts him back on course. And then, you know, a couple birdies on the back nine, 7 pars to finish out and close it out. The one thing I did like about this tournament, aside from seeing another first-time winner this year, is the fact that you had a lot of guys playing, you know, to win and try and book their spot in Augusta. And some names that we typically have seen play Augusta are not going to be there.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, it's a tournament where, you're right, not all the big top players, top 10 players in the world are playing, but it's these guys grinding for that chance to play in the Masters. It's what makes it so unique. It means so much more, as I mentioned at the top, than just the money and the guaranteed spot on the PGA for the next 2 or 3 years. You get to go to the Masters the following week, or that night even. I'm sure you fly right directly to Augusta. It's so cool. Happy for Spahn. Great player. One of those guys who's had a pretty good career, has made some good money, bouncing around a little bit, played on a few different tours throughout his life. And you know what? He just seemed to, as you mentioned, keep making pars down the stretch. And that's what won it. Some tournaments, you got to make birdies to win it. This one, you just had to make pars. A lot of the other guys were choking it away with some rare bogeys and missed shots and some bad putting we saw throughout the week. Shout out Jordan Spieth. But it's a cool little tournament. They got that 16th hole where the green is kind of like a donut, where the sand trap is right in the middle. Even saw Matt Kuchar hitting out of there on Sunday. So great tournament. Good win for Spahn. Was happy for him, and now the PGA starts looking ahead to the Masters.
Yeah, some big names aren't going to be there this week. Just off the hop here, Jason Day, obviously disappointing. He's had a tough run on the course and obviously off with the passing of his mother recently. But, you know, he won't be there, a staple at Augusta for the past few years. Ian Poulter. Matt Kuchar, who you mentioned, Kuch is always usually in the conversation, at least for a couple days.
Mr. Skechers himself, yep.
Yeah, and he's not going to be there. Henrik Stenson, and I know the one guy you want to talk about, Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, I know Ricky Fowler. Felt bad for him. Just couldn't get it together, even though I picked him. I wrote down the same names. Kuchar, I don't know what's going on. He's changing his putting grip a couple times. He just couldn't seem to putt it out. I got Bo Hostler. He just couldn't keep it together being in that final group. He ended with a 72. And I heard an interesting little story about him. He was actually at the University of Texas, playing at the University of Texas. He was the Big 12 Player of the Year twice in his 4 years there. And his teammate was Scottie Scheffler. Of course, now Scottie Scheffler is the number one player in the world going into Augusta. Bo, not even going down to Georgia. So interesting twist there. Canadian side, you had Adam Hadwin. It would have been nice to have one more Canadian in that Masters field. He finished T4, ending with a strong 67. He was our top Canadian for a few years now, but it seems that maybe he's been passed by Mackenzie Hughes and Corey Connors. Still a great iron player that could win at any time. So look for him to maybe do some special things this upcoming year and get his name back into the Masters fold for next year.
Yeah, I think so. He gets on that President's Cup team too. That can certainly help him out in his rankings for sure.
Now spring is here, but spring training has come to an end, and the boys of summer are about to begin, and that'll be our T4. Major League Baseball is starting their season a week late, but Everyone is excited to be back for a full season with high expectations around the league. The Blue Jays have found themselves as favorites in the AL East, and the Dodgers have already declared they are winning the World Series. Mike, can you smell the peanuts and Cracker Jacks yet?
Yes, overpriced beer and the greasy slices of pizza. Love it. I think anytime the start of the baseball season, if you're a baseball fan, obviously, the start of the baseball season is always special. It's opening day. But when your team is expected to be a contender and for the division, the American League, and the World Series, the anticipation's even greater. And I think that's where we are as Jays fans heading into this season. Lots of expectation, and I think they're going to deliver.
Yeah, the baseball season, there's so much optimism about how things are going to go and what the lineup's going to look like. I mean, even in years when I knew the team wasn't going to be good, they were still pumping it up and making it seem like there could be some interesting storylines and interesting players, and you never know what could happen. Obviously, 162 games, but this year feels different. It feels like that 2015, 2016 Blue Jays, or even way back to 92 when things were starting to move in the right direction and the pieces are all coming together. There's not many question marks in this Blue Jays lineup. Maybe a couple spots in the bullpen. We know that if healthy, we're going to be able to run the same lineup for quite some time. Infield's great, outfield great, pitching rotation one of the best. So Mike, let's jump into the MLB season and maybe give ourselves a little bit of a look, maybe some predictions for division winners. Why don't you roll through your AL division winners?
Okay, in the East, Blue Jays. I obviously a homer pick, but I truly believe that they're going to be the top team in the division and in the American League. In the Central, I really like the Central Division. I think a lot of teams have gotten better in the Central, but a lot of teams are still quite young, and I think they're going to be another year away. For that reason, I'm saying White Sox are still a real solid team, and I think that they'll win the Central. Expect a little more competition from some of the other teams, though. And the West, I mean, right now, you got to go Houston. They've lost some guys, but I think the quality is still there. So I like Jays, White Sox, and Astros for a division.
And for those of you that don't know, a couple changes to the playoff format this year. You'll have your three division winners in the AL, obviously in the NL as well. And then the next three wildcard teams, you'll have the lower seeded winner of the division play the bottom wildcard team, best two out of three, all at the upper seeds home park. And then the other two wild cards will do the same to come up with the four teams that are moving on. So Mike, who are your three wild cards in the AL?
This is where it got a little trickier. I didn't want to take all three from the same division, but I put Yankees, Rays, and my last one, the Mariners.
Ooh.
I think the Mariners surprised a lot of people last year, and obviously adding Robbie Ray is going to help them. The A's have, pretty much given everyone away in the division. So there's
going to be. They called me and offered me a spot, but I said, no, you don't pay enough.
So there's more wins to be had in the West. And the Angels, I don't know. They can never seem to put it together. As I said, in the Central, I think, the Tigers and Royals, I think they're another year away at least. And I didn't want to pick Boston. So Mariners get my last spot.
Nice. So for me in the AL, it's similar to you. I got the White Sox out of the Central. I think they're going to be a great club, and there's not as much competition in that division. So look for them to pound through it, maybe even get that top spot in the AL going into the playoffs and get the bye. I got the Jays in the East, plus 165 right now. So look out for that. I've mentioned, love this team and think they're going to win the East and contend for a World Series. But in the West, I went a little bit different. I know Houston still got a few of those players, but they're not going to be what they used to be. So I'm going to go with the LA Angels, formerly the California Angels way back in the day. Come on, Trout. You need to have a big year. It's time to get yourself into the playoffs. Otani, he's going to be able to pitch and hit a lot more. They got the Otani rule now. Get some pieces around this team. I want to see the Angels. I'm pulling for them because I want to see Trout in the playoffs. So those would be my three division winners. Now for the wild card, I'm similar to you, two from the East. Yankees are going to be tough. they're going to be good, and you know they're going to keep adding because they got this core that wants to play. The Rays as well, still a sneaky good team. Who knows why? Awful stadium, but they're going to be good because they always are of late. And then I'm going to throw Houston as that last wild card, and I'm bringing that up because I want to see the Yankees, Houston, best two out of three in the playoffs, full stadium in the Bronx. What a crazy atmosphere that would be.
That would be good. That would be good.
Now let me know your NL division winners and wildcard spots, Mike.
So in the NL, we'll go east, west, and through. Defending champion Braves. You know, I think they're the best team in that division. They lost Freddie Freeman, obviously, but they've added. They're a good team. In the Central, another team that's near and dear to my heart, the Milwaukee Brewers. And in the West, the Dodgers. I mean, that there's some good teams in the West, but the Dodgers are on a different level. Wild card wise, I got two coming from the West. I got the San Francisco Giants, San Diego Padres, and my third wild card team, the Philadelphia Phillies.
Oh, very nice. I agree with you, Brewers in the Central. Think they're going to be a good team. Dodgers, mark them in already. They're going to win the East without even showing up. And then I think might be now the toughest division, at least in the NL, maybe in baseball if you mix in the AL East, is the NL East. And I got the Mets coming out of there. Some good pitching. Adding Stroman, I know what he's all about, but hey, if he can pitch good, they got a decent rotation. And of course, watch out for them to add some players down the stretch as well with their loaded pockets too. Wild cards. I got the Braves going in there. I think they're going to be good even without Freeman. They'll still contend. Maybe have a little bit of dip at the start of the year, and that might be why they don't win the division. And then I agree with you. I got the Padres and Phillies as the other two teams going into the wild card in the NL. So, Mike, tell us your two champions and who's facing each other in the World Series.
ALCS, I got the Jays beating the White Sox. NLCS, I got the Dodgers beating the Braves. World Series, Blue Jays over Dodgers.
Hey,
three games. Now we have to play a fourth.
Let's pool our money together. I'm in total agreement with you. AL Toronto. I picked them in the 2022 World Series winner when we looked ahead at our 2022 year, and I'm sticking with it. They got a great rotation, five strong pitchers, the best infield in the AL, and Springer will be an MVP candidate this year, along with Vladdy. Look for the two of those guys just to have amazing seasons. The NL, yeah, it's the Dodgers. Boring, I know, but they still have the best pitching. They got hitting from the previous 2 years as well. And then you add in Freddie Freeman. Yes, they're older, but they're still hungry to prove something after letting the Braves win last year. And I'm going Jays to beat the Dodgers in the end.
Wow, we fully agree on both sides. I don't think that's ever happened before.
No. It's awesome, but now it makes me worried that it's not going to happen. And then one thing I wanted to call out, surprises for next year, let's call it, or this year. One player I want you guys to watch is Spencer Torkelson. He's going to be the first baseman for the Detroit Tigers. He was the first overall pick in 2020. He blew through the Detroit farm system last year, starting at high A ball, went all the way to triple A. He finished with 30 home runs and a .38 on base percentage. They started him kind of as a third baseman, but they're moving him full time to first base this year, a la Vladdy Jr. His bat is powerful with a lot of upside. He will play every single day for a not-so-good Tigers team. So not only will he win the AL Rookie of the Year, I think he'll one day lead the AL in home runs. This kid's powerful, young. Look for him to do great things this year.
Yeah, I agree on the Tigers front. That's a team I've kind of circled as one to watch. And like I said, I think the Central, the Royals, the Tigers, the Twins have done a lot to improve their teams. And, you know, the White Sox are still the class of the division. But, you know, the Tigers, in addition to what you mentioned, Mize, Manning, Skubal, they added Eduardo Rodriguez, Javier Baez. They're heading in the right direction. I think a year from now, if we revisit this talk, maybe the Tigers are a team that are, you know, scratching for a wild card spot or contending maybe with the White Sox. So I like what the Detroit Tigers have done, and I think they're going to be a competitive group this year.
Maybe this summer on a slow news day, I'll tell my Tiger Stadium story from when I was a kid.
Okay.
Little tease. So many great sports are going on right now, but you know Mike needs his NFL time or he won't sleep at night. So that will be our T5. The NFL continues to make shocking news in one of the most unbelievable off seasons in the history of the league. Just after Tom Brady announces he is coming back, Bucks head coach Bruce Arians retires. Interesting. Meanwhile, the NFL decides to change the overtime rules and teams start shuffling picks ahead of the NFL draft. Mike, put on your tinfoil hat and tell me that Tom orchestrated this move by the Bucks.
There is some chatter that might be the case. Maybe he had a hand in the decision, but I don't know. It was interesting. It kind of caught, everybody off guard. There were some chatter that, this was something he was considering at the scouting combine. Bruce Arians, talked about wanting to leave the team in good position for what he hoped would be the next head coach in Todd Bowles, and that's where we are. I think Tampa probably would have lost Bowles next season. He's that good of a coordinator. He has head coaching experience with the Jets. He was there for 4 seasons. He's a good coach and deservingly gets another shot at head coach. Obviously, the timing of everything is going to be debated and everything. Both sides have said, no, this isn't Tom's decision, but an interesting one given the timing, but, good for Todd Bowles and a good replacement.
Tom Brady does not re-sign and come back with the Bucs without knowing this is going to happen. You cannot believe that this was a surprise to him. But why did it take so long to announce, and why does he want to do it if the team is going to be really good? Those are the questions popping up right now. Just timing is so weird. It's either a health issue, which actually wouldn't surprise me, and let's hope he is okay. We all know how much pressure these coaches are under and how tough this job is for 12 months a year. So that could be the problem. Or Tom didn't like working with him and Bruce knew that. So once the organization wanted Tom back and they obviously like Bruce, they decided time to split hairs here and move Bruce up to the front office and let Tom run as a quarterback. Because I wouldn't be surprised, Mike. Let's not be surprised if Tom plays 1 year, doesn't have a good year, decides to retire again, and guess who's back at head coach the following season?
I guess we'll see. But moving on to the overtime rules. So now both teams are going to be assured of possession in the playoffs. Indy and Philly were the ones pushing for this. No changes in the regular season. So now in overtime, both teams will have a chance to possess the ball. If they both score or are unsuccessful on their first possessions, the next score wins, sudden death format. So, I'm okay with it. I hate the possibility of losing the toss and potentially losing the game, especially in the playoffs. So,
I agree. I mean, it's going to be a lot of strategy now. It's all going to come together where you need to decide, do we want to play defense first or get the TD and maybe do a 2-point conversion to put the pressure on the other team? All these are going to come into play now, which is kind of cool. But the main point of doing this is to quiet the noise around the losing team and the what ifs that come with it, just like we saw with the Buffalo Bills this season. But it's good for us, because it means more exciting playoff football and the potential for more dramatics at the end of the game. So I'm all for it. Fine by me.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last thing, the trade between Philly and New Orleans, trading some picks there. The chatter amongst those in the know apparently is that maybe the Eagles aren't so set on Hurts long term, and next year's draft, 2023, provides some bigger names, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young at quarterback. Potentially. So, I mean, they both, Philly still has 2 first-rounders this year. New Orleans does as well. So just something to fill a slow news day, I suppose.
Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, the guys haven't talked Masters yet. Well, stick around after the break as we do a full Masters preview, talking everything from Tiger to grass types to Palmetto cheese. So we'll be right back. Finally, The Masters is back and back at full force now that we know patrons will be there and Tiger Woods will tee off at 10:34 a.m. on Thursday. Talks about the field and world number one Scottie Scheffler have begun, along with all the traditions that come with Augusta. Mike, did it make you feel like a little kid watching Tiger on the range this week?
It did. And then to hear him speak just about, you know, if I can compete, I'm here to win type thing. And he just looked real comfortable on the course and played with Freddie and Justin Thomas on Monday. And a little bit of weather got in the way on Tuesday. But, you know, he had his press availability and just spoke about how he felt and said he's swinging well. It's the walk for him. But as he said, all signs point to he's playing, and it's great news for all of us.
Yeah, he looks great. He looks happy. He looks comfortable, which is why he would choose this location as his return. He would not be doing this if he couldn't compete and feel like he could win. I don't see Tiger as one of those 60-year-old past champions that plays their first two rounds knowing that they won't make the cut. He'll only play if he can win at this tournament, and he obviously feels like he can. The hype around him makes this one of the most anticipated sports events in years. The crowds watching him during Monday's practice round were insane, and they're only going to get better throughout the week and hopefully weekend. He moves the needle in golf and in sports, from what shoe is he wearing to who is he playing with and if he can contend. I mean, I grew up watching golf and knowing of Tiger Woods, of course, but not enjoying it as much as I could have. The coverage wasn't as good as it is today, and he was winning by such huge margins back then, it made it tough for a kid to really enjoy and watch all day on Sunday. But 2019 was obviously something so special, and I feel that all golf fans are hoping for more of that this year. So come on, Tiger, bring it for us. Let's have a big year. But obviously, Mike, there's some great names out there in the field as well. Any of the other ones really jump out to you that you like before we make our picks?
Well, I think the one thing about the Masters is typically, it is a recognizable name that is winning or in contention or hot at the moment and plays well. And I think this year it feels like a lot of the usual suspects are up there. John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheffler, the world number one. Some guys are coming in really hot and some guys haven't won in a while. But whatever it is, Augusta's one of those courses in the Masters where, you know, guys who play here every year, typically who play well, are in contention every year. Contention could be anything. It could be top 20, top 30. They're usually making the cut and their name's involved. And I think what you're going to see is a lot of these big names, because it's a small field, right? It's only 91 golfers. So it really is the best of the best. And it's really, I don't think there's one clear-cut favorite this year.
No, I agree with you. And I think that's what makes the Masters so great, is it's a smaller field. So you clump these players together. You don't get too many surprise names. And the leaderboard always is jam-packed with some of the great names. And coming down the stretch at Augusta, it doesn't get any better. You mentioned Scheffler, the number one player. Listen to this one. Only Ian Woosnam has won the Masters in his first week as the number one player in the world, something Scottie will look to match this weekend. Jordan Spieth, he's always a solid pick who rises up to the occasion at this event. As you mentioned, some golfers are just more comfortable here, and I won't be surprised to see his name on the leaderboard on Sunday. Now, this past Sunday, when Tiger was at the end of the range by himself hitting balls, who was the only other golfer there? Sun Jing Im. He is a grinder driving around the country in his Honda. Let's remember, he finished second in the fall 2020 Masters, and he played great on the weekend that week. Maybe he's got some magic left this week, and he can pull it off again in this Masters. You got Canadians, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes. They have a serious chance to win, and that would be so much fun. We all know what it was like when Mike Weir went on that run. The whole country would rally around them. Connors finished T8 last year after a disappointing 2-over in the final round, dropped them out of contention. Good early starts for both of these will definitely help.
Yeah, for sure. It's the weather is looking like it's going to be quite nice. They're getting some rain, like you said, Tuesday, Wednesday, it looks like. And then
it doesn't rain in Augusta. They got that invisible bubble that's over top of it, no?
Well, the TV showed a different story this morning, but, you know, it's shaping up weather-wise to be favorable this week.
Now, a couple of things I wanted to call out. Course changes. They changed a couple holes this year. You got the par 4th 11 was stretched from 505 yards to 520. It will give the players a different angle into the green. A hole that was the second most difficult in the history of the tournament has not got any easier. It's going to be tougher on these guys to get there. And then you got the par 5 15th. It was moved from 530 yards to 550 yards. 15 different trees were removed on the right side on the 11th fairway along with the pine straw that it was surrounded by. So when you see it, it's going to look a little bit different. We all remember that second shot from Tiger into the green from the straw in 2019. Well, that's now all gone. It's grass around there. Trees are gone, but there's a few couple trees poking through, so it's still going to be a challenge, but most of those guys should be able to drive it, so it's not into that area. But I like a different little change. It's going to be something different going into the weekend. Mike, do you have a favorite hole at Augusta?
I think, you know, probably the two most picturesque for me, I would say. 12, Golden Bell, the par 3, and number 13, Azalea, where, you know, the green is backed by a beautiful arrangement of flowers and trees and shrubs. It's very picturesque. So, and it's in Amen Corner where things start to get really interesting. You know, they say the tournament truly doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday, and Amen Corner plays a big role in that. So 12 and 13, I really like.
It's my favorite part of when I rewatch the 2019 Masters, just watching all these guys dunking in the water on 12, and then Tiger sticks it right in the middle of the green. but yeah, for me, it's hole 13, Azalea. You got the dogleg left where your tee shot has to be shaped kind of as a draw for right-handed players to get a good run on the fairway. This hole definitely helps lefties. As we saw Phil, you know, he'd bomb it, almost slice, cut it around the corner. The tee off area, the tee blocks are kind of tucked away by themselves. And then when you get to the green, you know, you got a little bit of trouble with the trees on the right. And then you got the green tucked away over a stream you got to hit to. But once you get out onto that green, it must feel like you're all alone on the golf course, just tucked away in the corner, about to make maybe one of the biggest putts of your life. I mean, you're right. It is the end of Amen Corner, but there's a lot of important golf left after the 13th hole.
Yeah, for sure. It, like I said, it's the back nine is the most exciting.
Oh yeah. And it's the nine that everyone knows and remembers, but you know, the Masters has a ton of traditions. Mike, what's your favorite Masters tradition?
I think the music, Jim Nantz welcoming us, calling us his friends, bunkering down in Butler Cabin throughout the week. And then, of course, that's where the jacket presentation is. Just everything about the Masters I like. I like the Champions Dinner aspect of it. Tuesday nights, the defending champion hosts a dinner, sets the menu, and all the champions that are present that year attend.
You just named every tradition at the Masters as your favorite, so
yes,
I can tell you're excited.
Are.
For me, the greatest tradition is the Champions Dinner. I mean, when you actually win the tournament, that's great, money, fame, all that stuff. But really, the cool thing is that you get invited to this dinner with all these legends that you've looked up to for your entire golf life since you were a kid. And you get to go to this dinner every year for the rest of your life. Obviously, it's going to be great food, great wine, awesome stories being told, and it's a reason to go to the amazing place of Augusta every April. You know where you're going to be, bringing your family down and letting them enjoy in it as well. But come Tuesday night, you throw that green jacket on, it's just you strolling into that little restaurant-y area in the clubhouse for dinner and a few cocktails with the boys. No other sport or tournament has anything like this, and that's why it's so special. Only one way to get invited, and that's to win.
I'd be worried about spilling something on the jacket.
I'm sure these guys
have to take it off.
And I'm sure these guys have multiple jackets because let's be honest, as a few of them get older, the couple LBs creep in. Those original jackets wouldn't fit anyway. So
that's a mustard stain from '97 right there.
Now, speaking of the champions dinner, Mike, let's say that you did win. What would Mike Mazzero's champion dinner look like?
Well, if we're going by the format of what the champion would typically serve, they are responsible to pick appetizers, first course, family style sides, the main course, and dessert. So here's what I would go with. Start.
Okay.
My appetizers, a nice little antipasto bar, you know, good meat, cheese, olives, and some bruschetta. That would be the appetizer. My first course, creamy tomato soup with mini grilled cheese. And a nice, you know, very light arugula salad, oil, vinegar, nothing special. Family style sides, going garlic mashed potatoes, steamed green beans, and mac and cheese. For my main course, you're getting a 6-ounce filet mignon and some king crab legs. And then for dessert, tiramisu and vanilla ice cream, but a specific tiramisu, not just your run of the mill tiramisu.
Sounds great. Sounds like, you know what, they might want you to win to get in there and get that serving in there. For me, a little bit more simpler. My appetizers, I'm going cheese sticks and fried calamari, along with 5 shot skis laid out in the dining room. So all the guys got to do a nice shot when they walk into the room together. It's the only way to start off a party. My first course, nice little clam chowder, thick, warm you up. Maybe it's a little chilly on that Tuesday night. My family style, a nice garlic mash. Gotta have a garlic mash. So good on the side of anything. My main course, salmon and lobster from the Maritimes. I've only been there a few times out east, but man, that food is so good, so fresh. I mean, I'm Canadian, so you got to bring a little bit of Canadian flair to your meal, which all the guys do. Drinks, we're going pints of Molson Canadian, tons of pints of Molson Canadian, followed by a nice Pinot Noir from J. Lore. Love that wine. Keep it simple. Really good for all those guys. But everyone's got to be drinking in there. It's going to be a party when I'm hosting. Dessert, not ice cream cake, that's for sure. But a nice Billy Minor pie from the keg. We're shipping it down from the keg. Nice Billy Minor pie to finish it off with a nice coffee and a nice digestivo of Jaeger, sipping on a nice chilled glass. So to digest yourself so you can throw a few more pints of Molson Canadian on at the end.
Only one side. Interesting.
Keep it simple, man. Don't overstuff yourself. You're going to have a lot of drinks throughout the night. It's a celebration. Now let's move on to our golf picks. Going into the Valero, I had the lead at 33-11. Killing. But all of our picks were outside of the top 20, so no points were awarded to either of us. Now, I have the first pick for the Masters, I believe, Michael, and we've agreed to do 5 selections for majors, so here we go. And I'm going to start it off big with a guy that I actually believe is going to win and complete the career Grand Slam. I'll go with Rory McIlroy.
My first pick, John Rahm.
Can he handle the pressure, though? He's a little bit of a crazy man out there.
He'll be fine.
One guy I thought would win a lot more majors than he has, and I don't know what stalled him, but maybe this is what gets that ball turning. I'm going Justin Thomas.
I'm going to go with a guy I like a lot, Cameron Smith.
Oh, he'd be an interesting guy in the Champions Dinner the following year. I'm going with a young star that's won, and he would fit that mold perfectly of being a Masters champion. I'll go with Colin Morikawa.
I'm going to take a guy that always does well in majors and he's healthy, Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if he's got it to get to that leaderboard and just get over that hump, but he might be a guy to watch. You're right. He could get hot quickly. Okay, I'm going with one of the top Americans at the Ryder Cup this year, and maybe he'll continue that right through the Masters here, Patrick Cantlay.
I'm going to take a guy who's had some success at previous Masters, and I'm hoping that will be the case this week, Xander Schauffele.
Ooh. Did you see that when Scottie Scheffler arrived at the course on Monday, the guy, I guess, who was taking his bags, the attendant setting him up, called him Xander?
There, on my list here, I had to look because they are very similar. A couple laughs with the NAS. You know, it's, I had to make sure I was making the right one.
Well, on that note, I guess I'll take him. The number one player in the world. I'll take Scottie Scheffler.
A last pick. I'm going to take a guy that I think surprised a lot of people last year, did well, finishing second by himself. And he's been knocking on the door. I don't know if he'll get the job done, but Will Zalatoris.
Ooh. No Tiger Woods selected. But damn, am I pulling for him. It would be great. Now listen, sign up with MyBookie and use promo code JABBO to make your first deposit. Follow our picks with a chance to win only at MyBookie.com. Each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. I had Kansas covering over Villanova. No problem. Mike was stuck on Duke, and they lost. In fact, in talking to my dad today, he even said, hey, tell Mike to start picking some winners in his best bets of the week. Well, that's going to have to wait because I'm up first. And I'm taking the guy I selected first in my golf pick, someone I really like this weekend. He looks like he's rounding into form again and finding that old swing. I'm going Rory McIlroy to finish top five at plus 425. His game's been good. He's ready to break out. He knows he needs this one. He wants to be in that dinner every year more than anyone. Give him the green jacket. Give him a top five finish for Rory.
Yeah, Mr. Starkman, I'm definitely trying. It's not been easy pickings the last few weeks for me, but I'm going to try and go with an easier one here. And I'm taking John Rahm to finish in the top five. He's at plus 230 right now, so I like that. And hopefully that gets me back on the board.
Yeah, I like Rahm. I like Rahm. As long as he can keep his cool and make some putts and not do any putter throws at Augusta and get himself kicked off the grounds, he might be doing all right. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week, especially the Masters. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.